The Off The Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, you're welcome along. It's the 2nd of January. We've made it this far into 2020 and you're very welcome to OTB AM. I do hope that you'll be listening throughout and viewing throughout the rest of 2020. We're going to have lots of stuff coming up throughout the year and a packed show as well today. We're going to talk darts, football and a lot more. But we're going to start with football because Stephen Doyle was working far off the ball at the Emirates Stadium last night. Saw the latest insipid performance from Manchester United, absolutely battered by Arsenal in a 2-0 defeat. Doyle, was that pretty much how it worked out?
Yeah, I think so, Johnny. You say battered. Like, to be honest, like I said to Gary during the game, Gary Breen last night, my co-commentator, usually when you've got two, you know, decent quality teams going up against each other, and, you know, United are still a team with good quality in the side, then usually both sides will have purple patches throughout the game. But I can't really, when I think back to the game now, I can't think of any kind of time during the game where United had a purple patch. You know, there's maybe some, I suppose, a couple of 5-10 minute periods maybe in the second half where they did okay, but there was nothing really that impressive. And yeah, Arsenal really, they dominated possession, dominated the play throughout the match. I thought there was some really poor performances in that Manchester United team. Again, David De Gea with another mistake leading to that second goal. Luke Shaw was really disappointed. He really got a roasting from Nicolas Pepe, who scored that first goal for Arsenal. I thought Luke Shaw really, I don't know, I'm left scratching my head sometimes watching Luke Shaw play. You know, he's very highly rated, it seems, in the Premier League in England. I'm not sure about you, Johnny. I'm sure you've seen the guy playing.
He doesn't really look like a footballer, though, does he? Like, he doesn't actually look like a footballer anymore. Like, from his early days as a kind of a precocious player at Southampton, he if you're a winger and you're taking on Shaw, you're probably like, yeah, I fancy this.
Yeah, we even said it before the game that Gary was talking before the match that he felt that the Arsenal could get some joy down that right side as well. And they have obviously Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who's, I suppose, for the shortage of right backs at Arsenal, has been playing well in that position. That right back, he's a right midfielder. He's not a right back by trade. He had some good play down that right side as well. And then, I suppose, from an Arsenal perspective, there's some really good performances in that Arsenal side. I thought Mesut Ozil was very impressive.
He was absolutely excellent, Doyle, especially first half, just pulling the strings. He looks like a rejuvenated character, doesn't he?
Yeah, Mikel Arteta said in the build-up to the game that he wants to bring the best out of him, and he says he will build that team around him to get the best out of him, but he also wants to see some work rate from Mesut Ozil, and I thought we saw that last night. There was a couple of instances where he got back, he was helping out with the defence, which we haven't seen maybe from Mesut Ozil in a while. I thought that one of the most impressive players in the team last night was Lucas Torreira. I remember watching him, the first time he really caught my eye, I think, was for Uruguay in the World Cup last year, Johnny. I thought he was excellent, and when he came to Arsenal first, he was having that really good impact. He's a really tigerish small midfielder, but he's very good in the tackle. He's good at getting the ball out. And I thought last night he really saved Arsenal a few times. He was back in the box, helping out with the defensive effort. He was absolutely brilliant. And in fact, when you look at the two, because both sides played that similar formation, the 4-2-3-1, you look at the Arsenal double pivot, you had Xhaka beside Torreira, and then you compare that to Fred and Matic from Manchester United. And I thought Arsenal looked straight ahead in that position.
Yeah,
I thought Xhaka last night, you know, he's a really good distributor of the ball. If you have Torreira beside him doing all the spade, doing all the shovel work, and then you've got Xhaka then, he was putting the ball out left, putting it out right. He's a really good passer of the ball. And I thought he looked sharp last night, Granit Xhaka.
Yeah, Xhaka obviously is future in some doubt, but when you saw the Manchester United team, Fred alongside Matic, where you're kind of thinking, you know, if you're in the Arsenal restroom there, you're like, we fancy this. I mean, at this level, Matic, at this stage, like to even still be starting for Manchester United, and just from their perspective, it's, you know, those couple of really good results, notably the Man City one, but they've been very in and out since, and this was just another real kind of two steps back performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And in fairness, I actually thought the much maligned Fred had been coming good over the last few games. I thought he had some good performances for Manchester United in that midfield. Generally, it was alongside McTominay. Nemanja Matic last night, I thought he kind of left Fred isolated a few times in that midfield. Now, there has been talk that Atletico Madrid have an eye on Nemanja Matic. And I was looking at Matic last night, and, you know, although he was getting around a little bit, you know, he's just, like, he's 32 years of age now. I just think Matic is past his best now. He's not a Premier League standard 100%. Player. And I think Atletico Madrid, if they were to sign him, they're taking a bit of a gamble. Maybe in La Liga, I suppose, maybe the pace of the game there, you know, might suit him a bit better at this stage. But the Matic definitely isn't up to Premier League football at the moment.
Yeah.
And I just thought he definitely left Fred isolated. And as well, because, as I said, Xhaka gave that supply ball to the Arsenal attacking players, whereas United didn't have that. Rashford and Martial, they were starved of possession all night. That said, I think when you look at young Daniel James, 21 years of age, and for all his attacking play, Johnny, he's excellent. But I've seen United now three times they've done their games over the last couple of months. I just think the work rate of Daniel James is one of his most impressive facets of his game. Whereas I thought Martial and Rashford last night, it's the old Martial Rashford. When they're not getting the ball, they seem to just go out of the game. I just don't think their work rate is as good as Daniel James. That's saying a lot for a fella that they only signed during the summer.
Yeah, just on Matic, he turns 32 in August, so you'd imagine he still has a bit of legs left, but it doesn't look to be a Premier League level. Just on Arsenal, what has Arteta done to sort of change things? And I suppose one notable thing that seemed apparent from watching the game was that there seemed to be a really good atmosphere in the ground last night, which hasn't always been the case there. And also the fact that the players' work rate seemed to be up, you know, 10 million times really from previous regimes, and the crowd seemed to be buying into that.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a couple of things on that, Johnny. It was interesting reading his programme notes before the match, because he did speak about, that's one of the things, and he's been hammering at home at press conferences as well, that he wants the players to give the work rate, to give to, you know, to, I suppose he said there's certain standards at Arsenal that they have to meet, which he's asked them to do. Now, he's given them a game plan, obviously, which is working. I thought it was notable that if you looked out at the Arsenal team any time last night, the lines were never too far apart. They were nice and compact. They all moved together, the defence, midfield, and the striking players. And, you know, once you have that, once you've got a good shape and you've got good movement, that's a start. I also thought it was interesting, the programme notes, where he mentioned this work rate stuff, but also he mentioned Bernd Leno's mistake against Chelsea on Sunday. Now, he actually mentioned him by name, said that he made a mistake, but then he also said, thanks to the supporters for getting behind Bernd Leno, and for, you know, after he made the mistake, for still, I suppose, forgiving him and giving that support afterwards. But I just thought it was interesting that he kind of individually picked out a player for making a mistake in the programme notes for all the fans. So I suppose it's maybe just a sign that he's not going to take any, you know, if there is any bad performances out there and they aren't meeting those standards, that he's not going to stand for it. I suppose, look, the atmosphere wasn't amazing. It wasn't out of this world, Johnny. I've been there for other games where I felt a better atmosphere, but it definitely felt that they're, you know, I suppose Arteta's starting to win them over, but I do realise it's still early days and there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, we're going to have Daniel Harris on later on. He's going to talk about the latest with the Pogba injury situation as well. But just to wrap up with you, Doyler, the Man United Solskjaer situation, if he kind of had gotten over a little bit of pressure there maybe about 4 weeks ago or whatever, it seems to be right back on now, because and you see it on Twitter, so a lot of fans are saying that, you know, he's not the man and that they're back to square one and so forth. What do you think the future holds for him?
I be honest with you, I think the Glazers, Ed Woodward's obviously pulling the strings there at Old Trafford. I think they're just happy enough to let Solskjaer do what he's doing, bringing through a few years. The likes of Mason Greenwood was done quite well. It was actually interesting watching that interview that Marcus Rashford did with BT Sport, and he spoke about Louis van Gaal and the effect that Louis van Gaal has had on his career, and he's quite complimentary of the impact that he had there. Now, I suppose Solskjaer is doing something similar with some of the young players there, like Mason Greenwood, like Brandon Williams, who have been blooded under his reign. But I just... you know, if United want to win trophies, if they want to get back into the Champions League, I don't think they're going to do it under Solskjaer. I don't think he's cut out to be a top manager. Maybe they'll see out the season and start looking at Mauricio Pochettino, maybe take him to Old Trafford. We all know he's interested in the job. It's something that he would like to take on. But again, you know, are we looking with, you know, Pochettino still hasn't won a trophy, and that's going to hang over his head until he actually does it. And I don't know if he's even the right man to go in at Old Trafford and try and sort out the problems that they have there. But the problems are deep-rooted at Old Trafford. I've been saying this for a long time. Look, people, United fans know this. The problems are deep-rooted. It goes all the way to the top. And I think as long as the Glazers and Ed Woodward are there, you know, Manchester United fans could be in for a lot more pain over the next few years.
Thanks for that, Doyler.
Here's Johnny.
Phil Egan, good morning.
Good morning.
Bit of dual.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. A bit of a dual screening from you last night. What was going on?
So I was trying to keep an eye on the darts. Darts started just after 7. Obviously, Arsenal United started at 8 o'clock. Some would say United didn't even start.
Well,
the second half.
I watched the first half, then I had to go off and have the dinner or whatever, but it was fairly clear that the game looked over.
Dinner on the knee, no?
I think, for watching something else. I can't even remember now, but the dinner took a long time and I decided at halftime this game is over, they were that bad. And it was, I don't know, it looked like, I was kind of looking at the betting beforehand and Man United were slight favourites.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a hard enough game to call in ways. I saw Matic was playing and I was like, but you got the darts in. Would the darts always finish in time for the paper deadlines on the Sunday? Because they had, like, it was all the papers had it today, like there was plenty of coverage. I think it was even back page of The Independent, which we'll obviously look at.
Yeah, well, it was over. Like the fact that it was 7-3 to Peter Wright, it was over a bit earlier than you might have thought. Well, do you know what? Both players play quick anyway, so it was always going to be quick fire stuff. I mean, they were rattling off sets. In no time, Peter Wright was 2-0 up and you were kind of thinking the shock is on. But even at 2-0, when Van Gerwen got it back to 2-all, I just thought, yeah, it'll kick on here. Because my worry for Peter Wright was he's lost so many times to Van Gerwen. If it got tight, he might let the pressure get to him. But
was it he'd lost finals or he'd lost so many times to Van Gerwen?
Both.
Because he's 47, so he's like the oldest ever first-time
40,
winner.
49.
49 was. So he's the oldest ever first-time winner of the tournament.
Yeah.
And I haven't been following the darts, but what have we got here? We got an alarm. OTB AM. Welcome back. Yeah, we had a bit of a, it wasn't so much a fault. Was it a false alarm, Tommy Rooney?
I don't think it was a false
alarm. Anyway.
It was an alarm, Johnny. It took us all a moment or two to leave, but we saw the blinds going down outside and the newsroom all around. The newsroom were the first to go.
That was a bad sign.
Yeah. And then I ran into the other studio to see what they were doing. But it turns out the alarm was bleeding in here, so we couldn't stay on here.
No, no.
We had to go. Don't, so we were all congregated outside by the Luke Kelly statue at 7:37 this morning.
I don't think the listeners or viewers would have enjoyed it too much if we just ploughed on with the alarm in the background.
They got to listen to a montage of Andy Lee's career and also some of Richard Cooper's best bits.
Yeah, some great stuff there. It was, it's just, this is obviously the first show of the new year, so it's kind of hard to get your mojo. You're still a bit mentally tired from the Christmas, and then the alarm goes off, and you're like, Jesus.
What?
But apologies to Snakebite, because we didn't really talk the 10 minutes or so of darts, so we wanted to laud him on his victory over MVG last night.
No, we didn't. I didn't watch last night, I'll be honest with you, Johnny. That's why I had Phil in here this morning.
But to be fair, we're going to the papers, and he actually makes back page of the Indo, which I thought was quite interesting.
Here,
probably because of the colour. If the Indo were black and white, I don't think they would have gone with that.
And the PDC is a big deal. The PDC World Championship is a big deal, you know. He obviously bet Van Gerwen last night 7-3. A €600,000 purse.
It's all right.
Not bad. It's the first time Peter Wright has won it. He lost to MVG in 2014. He was a serious underdog last night. But I don't think it was ever really in doubt. I think Phil being a little later to the Deal or No Deal, so you might chat to him there, Tom being as well. So that's the lead in the Inno this morning. There's also Huddersfield vowed to act over McLean racist chants. That's our number in the papers this morning. We'll get into it in a couple of minutes. Mourinho hits out an idiot coach, VAR and the ball boys, so Spurs lose to Southampton. Danny Ings continues his form, scoring again, and Jose Mourinho makes a story all about him. He does what he does the best. And also Rory O'Connor has a piece on Conor Murray's grip on Ireland's number 9 jersey has never been weaker.
Yeah, that's an interesting piece by Rory. He's obviously speaking about the fact that his position looks less kind of secure, more vulnerable than Sexton's going into the Six Nations, and a few viable candidates as well, particularly the Ulster.
John Cooney.
Cooney as his main rival at the moment.
Luke McGrath, Jamison Gibson Park, and Keenan Blade of Connacht are all in the mix as well there. Yeah, so the McLean story.
I admire him, to be fair, because there's a couple of times now in recent games where he's basically brought to the attention of the officials, because that's what he's been sort of advised to do.
He's bearing the brunt of it. There was an issue in the Sheffield Wednesday game earlier this, or last week as well, and the game was stopped. There was an announcement put over to Tannoy, and I think McLean applauded the announcement, saying to asking fans to stop the abuse. Like it's the same. Like it's happening year after year with James McLean, and you know we're not going to come up with the reasons why or the solution to the issue here. Like, but I suppose the club investigating their own fans and potentially banning their fans is a step in the right direction. The announcement happening officially over to Tannoy is a good thing. That's not really making that much of a difference, but like
it's in the back page of the paper.
It's in the back page of all the papers as well. People are talking about it, you know, and it's coming up year after year. And James McLean is the figurehead of it. He's getting a lot of the abuse. Like Michael O'Neill was a Stoke boss yesterday, Northern Ireland manager for a number of years, so he wasn't the only one that those chants would have affected last night.
It's staggering that you know he's taken a political stance effectively, and he's been quite honourable about why he's done this, but people can't tolerate that. I think it's kind of good in a way that they're confronting racism of white people as well as racism of black people, because it's not as simple as you know what's going on in Italy and all that. And I think in terms of black players in Britain, it's Britain is nowhere near the worst, and generally there's complete tolerance of whatever your colour is, your skin colour. But the McLean thing is, it's just festering and it hasn't gone away.
No, it's not gone away. Huddersfield manager Danny Cowley said it last night. There's no place for discrimination of any type. We're in the 21st century in 2020. Mm. And Huddersfield are going to do their bit, and they're going to investigate it, but it's going to rear its head again. It's not going to go away. Like when next November comes around, James McLean and the Poppy is going to be back in the news again. It's not going to stop. James McLean isn't going to back down. And I'm not sure if the fans, you can say, are going to back down from abusing James McLean either until drastic action is taken. Like,
no.
Is it going to get to the stage we're going to dock Huddersfield points for their fans chanting?
It's not inconceivable if you've, it's not inconceivable, but you said something that's not going to go away. The FAI situation is not going to go away. And well-known Cork administrator Gerry McEnany, he's emerged as the favourite, according to The Echo in Cork, the favourite to replace Donal Conway as the FAI president. That's in an EGM on the 25th of January. That's an intriguing article on the back of The Echo. And obviously the FAI, we it's funny because I was just saying this the other day, there have been such progress made on the pitch in terms of Irish players at the moment. Like, it's been a great Christmas. Mm. And yesterday, Adam Ida coming on for Norwich. 8 teenage strikers have played in the Premier League this year. 4 of them are Irish.
Amazing.
That's absolutely amazing. Like, because we've had so little coming through. And that was picked up, I think, in the Examiner, that stat. But off the pitch, things are still a little bit ropey.
Yeah. And look, it's going to be that way for a number of months. Things are not going to become rosy in the FAI for a long time. Mm. And even if it is the, like, I don't know what way it's going to end up. But off the field, you know, Michael Obafemi's goal over Christmas. What a screamer. I know you boys were talking about it on air with Shane Keegan. Adam Ida got a couple of minutes last night, but it looks like he's going to get a chance in the Cup this week for Norwich. We all know about Troy Parrott. Is Parrott going to get a loan move in the Championship? Like Leeds United, after losing Eddie Nketiah, he's gone back to Arsenal. I don't know whether Parrott would go down to Bielsa or something like that. Maybe that's not the move for him, but Leeds are on the lookout for a striker.
The Championship stuff as well. So like Jason Knight obviously scoring the couple of goals for Derby.
Rooney talking him up
ahead of coming there. And I was only saying to you this morning, Malumbi's Millwall, they're sixth.
Yeah,
like
unbelievable.
The Championships are such, I love it, it's a basket case. The last time I looked, Millwall were just above the relegation zone. And Malumbi, you know, getting rave reviews as well.
I'm a big fan of him as well.
Yeah, they played Luton, beat them comfortably yesterday. And again, he had a good performance. I think playing alongside Sean Williams is huge for him. But
Aidan O'Brien in there as well.
Yeah, and just really, really encouraging times. It's interesting, Malumbi, because Glenn Whelan is obviously is going to have to leave his club. And he's you know, it probably won't be in regular football by the time the Slovakia game comes around. So Malumbi's case for getting some...
I think Josh Cullen died injured too. So
yeah.
Like Jason Knight and Malone, if they're making that much of an impact at Championship level, they're going to be looked at, because Mick McCarthy's bread and butter is Championship football as well.
Absolutely.
He knows what players are worth their salt at that,
absolutely.
Grade, that level.
What else you have?
I have the Star here, the Irish Daily Star. Again, ref stops game as McLean is abused. RT time as Mikel Arteta gets his first win as Manchester United boss. You're chatting to Stephen Doyle this morning. Daniel Harris is coming up a little later, after Manchester United's insipid performance last night. And also down here at the bottom, a big story. Team Talk Mag broke it last night, their Tyrone news site. Tyrone to lose Cathal McShane. So Cathal McShane, Tyrone full forward, is set to sign a deal apparently with the Brisbane Lions and the AFL. She's about to make the move over. McShane's...
He's not that young, McShane, is he? So, like, is he...
He's younger than me, Johnny, so he's young enough. He's 23, I'd say he's 23 or 24.
So is he like older than usual to be making this sort of move? And
probably
that?
Is, yeah. He probably is. But
massive,
you know,
blow to the red hand, though.
A massive blow, because yeah, in terms of the profile of footballer that he is, he's such a presence for Tyrone. Mm-hmm. And also, on top of that, right, so when he broke through as an under 21 footballer, he was either a big wing forward or a midfielder who could throw himself about and could play a bit of football. But the improvement that Cotton McShane has made in terms of his shooting accuracy and his ability as a target man as a full forward has been like an absolute standout over the last 2 years. He's just improved tenfold. Mm-hmm. And obviously his footballing skills, as much as anything, are what the AFL are looking for here. The Brisbane Lions also have James Madden there, a young Dublin footballer who we've never really seen after under 21 level. But McShane is very young, minor in 2013, so what is he, 20, 24, 23? Massive blow, but we're seeing a lot of footballers like from Division 1 counties even step away this year. In Cavan, they've lost Killian Clark and Darren McVitie, two massive footballers. There's been a number of lads in Meath over the last couple of years who've stepped away. Donald Lennon is back this year, but like, you can't really stop lads like Colin McShane, who puts in so much into their football career to go and play in the AFL.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. It's amazing. I know Dan and Kerry, they have a lot of trouble with young lads, losing young lads like Stephen O'Cumber and Mark O'Connor, and they've held on to David Clifford. But like, for the likes of Colin McShane, who's 23, 24, he's probably the right age to go to Australia now.
Absolutely.
And take advantage of a career over there. We had Dan Flynn here a couple of weeks ago, and he was on about how he was too young at that age. Kieran Kilkenny didn't really enjoy it when he went. They were 18, 19, but he's 23, 24. Maybe this is the time to go. Mm. Also in the Star, Eamon Dunphy's column, United are a joke with Ole at the wheel. Matt Busby's basic principle was that no one player was bigger than the club. Who's he talking about?
Pogba,
yeah.
It was in the back of the Herald as well here. We've Ferdinand wants clarity after Arsenal defeat, and that's about Pogba. And obviously, yeah, the Pogba situation, we'll talk to Daniel Harris about this, but talk of an injury now as well. And he's actually played very little. Came off the bench in a game recently, did quite well. But
he came off the bench in two games, got about 50 minutes, maybe 60 minutes. Then was rested for the next game. Mm. He appeared at his, I think his brothers and his family had hosted a charity match.
That's right.
And he appeared at that over in France. And was set to be in the mix for the Arsenal game. And when Ole was asked about it yesterday, there's a smirk and says, Paul's people have advised him to get work done on an ankle injury. So,
like, Thinly veiled.
Solskjaer seems to try and play the game a little bit like that. Mm. You know, he doesn't come out and hammer his players. He seems to try and plumose them a wee bit in the media, which is whatever way you go about it.
Do you reckon he'd understand what plumose meant if you said it to him in a press conference?
I'm not sure.
It's a great word.
If we get that chance, I'll say it though. But
he's going to go though, isn't he?
Solskjaer or Pogba?
Pogba.
I feel like Pogba's going to go. Mm. I feel like he is. And he's frustrated me a lot as somebody who watches a lot of Manchester United.
I think he's a charlatan, to be honest. I don't think he's... I think you have a duty to perform for your club and your fans, and he decides if he wants it or not.
Yeah. And like,
what a talent. But
unbelievable talent. And you were talking about Matic this morning, who's 31, and his legs are somehow just gone. Mm. Maybe his ambition has gone as well. It seems to happen to a lot of footballers that turn up at Manchester United. At 31, that shouldn't be happening.
No.
Especially if you're a professional footballer. But like, if Paul Pogba was in that midfield against Arsenal last night, you'd be just thinking something's going to happen. Because even when he came off the bench against Watford when they were 2-0 down, he made five chances. And he is an unbelievable talent, but at a club like Manchester United, when they're in the depths of where they are, Arsenal, they're not the characters you need. They just aren't the characters you can build a team around or form a culture around.
Back of the Mirror this morning, New Year Revolution, Arteta's new look Gunners and 15 match crisis with victory over Solskjaer, shambolic United, and they've been shambolic a couple of times recently as well. And Mourinho, obviously, I was an idiot, and we have that McShane news as well on the back of the Mirror.
I've got the Telegraph here. Gunners on target. And at the bottom, Joffre Archer, injury fear, England fast bowler, could be ruled out of the crucial second test with sore elbow. That's against South Africa. At the back of the Telegraph, Irish journalist Kate Rowan has her column, Final Whistle, and saying that Owen Farrell deserves more love. His feats deserve it. If he was an Irish, Welsh or Scotsman, he would have received far more adulation. That's a good read there. It goes into how Rapinoe and the likes of Hamilton and characters like Ben Stokes are received, and how Owen Farrell is kind of left to the side. I also want to just pick out a quote from inside the Telegraph, and it's Paul Hayward's column, and it's about the return of David Moyes.
Yes.
Unbelievable win yesterday for West Ham, 4-0.
Bounce factor.
Yeah, Mark Noble. Is he the top scorer in English football in 2020 so far this season? 2 goals. 4-0. But Felipe Anderson also scored, a man who has been very inconsistent. He was a... For anyone who played Football Manager or FIFA 3 or 4 years ago, he was this winger at Lazio that used to cut in, a bit like Robin, and scored these unbelievable goals. And he always had this loads of potential. But
quality talent.
Hayward saying that a move taken straight from Jose Mourinho asking Dele Alli, is he Dele or Dele's brother? David Moyes rocked in yesterday. And he was asked about West Ham's new leader, Felipe Anderson, who cost 36 million when he first joined the club and has been in and out of form. Moyes said, I've been asking him whether he's a Brazilian. I said, Brazilians score goals. Brazilians make the difference. They do something that make us all excited. I said, Felipe, you're not doing any of that. All I've been saying to him is, give me a Brazilian goal, and to be fair, he did.
Yeah, I'm not sure that kind of tactic's going to work week to week, but...
It seemed to work this week.
Yeah. Back of the race and post. No halting, relentless Reds and Blaze. Next team likely to fall to rampant leaders, and that's obviously tonight's game. A fascinating kind of subplot, I suppose, for... Irish fans, because Sheffield United have had an absolutely outstanding season so far with their Irish players key to that. And at the front of the paper, Boom Back With A Bang, and that's Al Boumfoto, who won the Tramore race yesterday, which he won last year en route to winning the Gold Cup. And a rather deflated looking Barry Geraghty there after Champ fell at the last and went about to win on his prep for Cheltenham.
I've got the Times here. Angry Mourinho idiot jibe. Spurs manager booked for abusing Southampton coach and then accuses the ball boys of time wasting. For anyone who doesn't know, the Southampton coach seemingly, as Spurs are about to make a substitution for the injured Harry Kane, who's now out for 6 weeks, massive blow. The Southampton goalkeeper coach jumped in and said, Danny Ings needs to come off first. We get to make our first substitution before you. So Mourinho said it was time wasting. And he also said that he thinks that the video assistant referee is the actual referee, that the referee on the pitch is now the assistant, so that the VAR should be now called the VOR, the video referee.
There's a lot of truth to that, in that the referee on the pitch now is kind of just, he's just passing on the orders.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. And then there's also match halted over IRA chant, which is the James McLean story as well. And I've also got The Guardian. I'll just end on that, Johnny. And
Well, you should show the front. I mean, how bleak is the front? I know that we're... Because, if you start the new year with any existential crisis, climate change, the hottest decade on record in Australia, and obviously there's a lot of talk about the Prime Minister's way of dealing with it, but it's a stark reminder of the reality outside of sport that we are kind of facing at the moment.
Australia burns. Just, as debate rages over PM's climate change stance. Mm. I don't know about you, but on Instagram this year I saw an awful lot of Irish people celebrating their Christmas on a beach this year in Australia. There's a lot of Irish over there.
Yeah.
And the wildfires seem to be getting worse and worse.
Yeah, my friend is over there and he was just saying the heat was absolutely unbearable, and he's a long way away from the fires. The back of the garden as well obviously deals with the game last night.
Purple Rain, Wright shocks Van Gerwen to become the Darts World Champion, and then off and running, Arteta gets his first win. And again, Mourinho. I was rude, but I was rude to an idiot.
Yeah, that's the back of the sun. I was rude to an idiot. And there's obviously a photo then of Harry Kane on the back holding his injury, which will put him out for 6 weeks. The back of the Irish Daily Mail, Saka 2, the unlikely hero, seals Arteta's first goal. Actually, just on that, I don't know if you saw it. I thought Doyle was a little bit harsh on De Gea, because the ball just came at him and he kind of...
Lacazette.
Well, The second goal where he basically just kind of he put it into an area, but I mean it was a badly, very badly defended corner, in that was it Lacazette made the run to the near post, just glanced it on, but nobody followed him. I was kind of like, Man United had filled the box with players, but nobody followed him. And then I wouldn't actually have blamed De Gea, but I
but it's not hard to score set piece against United at the minute. And De Gea, but I think the thing with De Gea is, he pushed it straight back into the middle. Again, it's a reaction save. You're probably right. Maybe he was harsh. Might be easy to...
Yeah, page 47 as well, Rory Keane. And this is, Farrell must get 2020 off to a fast start. And there's plenty of rugby coverage to do with Ireland ahead of the provinces playing at the weekend, and focusing on Farrell and obviously the scrum half situation as well. I want to mention this article in The Times, which Tommy put me onto early on. It's a really interesting article. Meet Andrew Giuliani, the man who was Trump's golf pro in residence. And Giuliani's dad obviously would have been the mayor of New York back in the day, Rudy. But there's a line here. Nobody's quite sure how much Giuliani the younger earns from his job at the White House, where his duties often involve teeing it up with his boss. Some reports claim it's $90,000 per year. Others reckon it's $97,000. The confusion is perhaps inevitable because nobody's quite sure exactly what else he does with the money. And then it goes on to detail that this lad is actually a promising golfer. His kind of career slightly derailed. Then it comes to the end. The search for explanations as to why leads inevitably to the golf course. While Rick Riley wrote an excellent book detailing how Trump cheats nearly every time he picks up the golf club, his most regular playing partner, that's Giuliani, offers a contrary view. I can't tell you how many times I've been finishing lunch at Bedminster, said Giuliani Jr. And someone who just finished their first time playing with him comes up and says, I can't believe he's that good. I thought he was going to shoot 100, but he ended up shooting like 72.
I wonder, does he sound like that?
Probably not. Giuliani, I remember when he took over New York and he had this very clean campaign. He was just going to clean up the city. But his son was a very promising golfer, but has a strange role in the White House, where he's actually been catapulted ahead of some senior figures in the Trump administration now, because that's how it works.
It is.
It's a fascinating article.
We all know that the Kerry boys have been caddying for rich Americans for years down there and making their connections, so it's the way to do it. also, that's Dave Hannigan's America at Large. It's always
Dave Hannigan, a really, really excellent article, and the Examiner has its sports pullout. Arteta's Happy New Year. We've Tommy Lyons on the back. Photo makes flawless return. Tommy was reporting from Tramore yesterday and has some good lines from William Mullins and Paul Townend, and a beautiful photo, I thought, as well, on page 16. This is Ballyhigh Strand horse and pony races yesterday, and just a silhouette of a couple of people watching as the horses and jockeys go by down at the beach. I was actually in Sandymount yesterday, and the place was teeming with people. Everyone wants to be out by the water. Dipped my toe in, it was a bit cold. That was it. Maybe I might brave the water for the next, maybe over the next sort of 2 weeks before it gets really Baltic in February.
That's good, Johnny. You got to do that at the start of the year.
What have we got coming up?
So we have got Daniel Harris coming up in a few minutes, but right now we're going to go back to the Emirates last night.
And this is like your presenting, which you did there at just before Christmas.
Yeah, but
played a starring role.
I did. I had about 10 minutes, 15 minutes notice.
Sometimes no prep is no pressure.
No prep is no pressure. Yeah, and we got through it. We got through it.
How did you like the presenting?
I got through it okay. Didn't really have to think about it too much. I have to be honest, I got a pang of nerves before I went on air. But we got there. I had a lot of help with my friends outside, Phil and Tom and Emma and Alex.
You're like Aidan O'Brien after a race here now.
And Johnny. What was the headline you texted me afterwards? What was it?
How Ward catapulted me to presenting stardom or something.
There you go.
So what happened that day was my phone just didn't go off. I was watching Netflix going to bed, and I think the screen was still on when I put it on flight mode, so the battery was drained. And this morning, my phone went off in unison with that of my girlfriend at 6:10.
So at the same time.
Absolutely no danger. We're going to Gary Breen, I think.
Yes, Gary Breen.
Gary Breen was talking to Stephen Doyle after the game at the Emirates, and obviously he was quite critical of Manchester United.
Arsenal 2, Manchester United 0, the final score at the Emirates. Stephen Doyle here with my co-commentator, Gary Breen. I suppose, what's your big take from that game tonight, Gary?
A lot of positives, really, in terms of Arsenal, in terms of what Arteta has done in such a short space of time. We saw a little bit of organisation in his first time in the dugout against Bournemouth, made it difficult to play through. Went to another level against Chelsea for 80 minutes, were brilliant, looked like Chelsea had run out of ideas, but for a goalkeeping error, it looked like they would have won that game. But I feel that they've gone to another level today. The organisation was there again in a short space of time. They still had that energy, that drive, that organisation to close people down. Every one of those players were working ever so hard, and it was impressive, it really was. I think we're looking at players who have much maligned for Arsenal, players who have certain strengths but a lot of weaknesses, but Arteta has found a way within that system to play to their strengths, and it ended up producing a really impressive performance.
I said to you at half time as well that I got the feeling that the players are all playing for each other, and yeah, that's what you want in a team, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, but ultimately I think more than anything these supporters want them to play for them, and a lot of the cheers that you would have heard this evening weren't necessarily expansive, lovely, beautiful football to watch. It was just closing down tackles. I think Torreira at the base of midfield typified that. I mean, I can't count on, there was probably double figures the amount of times he saved situations and cleared the danger. So he was impressive, but he wasn't alone. Xhaka, who I wouldn't be one of his biggest fans, but played so well at the base of that midfield in terms of getting that ball into Ozil at 10, who was so impressive. Yes, in terms of his skill, we know that, but how hard he worked off the ball. But that was how he played against Chelsea as well. So we're seeing a consistency now. I know it's in its infancy. I know this is very early days, but it does look good.
Will Xhaka be allowed to stay, do you think? Is he going to hang around here?
Well, I don't know. I think you asked me the question, can he repair the relationship? I would have thought pre-match, no, because I don't think ultimately that the problems he has with the Arsenal fans are not necessarily about his reaction to being substituted that time and cursing them as he come off. It's notably that he just doesn't play consistently well enough, makes the same mistakes. But we saw none of that this evening. And you would have thought that Manchester United would put him under the type of pressure where he could be vulnerable. But we didn't. We just saw a controlled, disciplined performance. But he wasn't alone. We literally saw it from 1 to 11.
It'll be interesting to see whether that Hertha Berlin move materialises for Granit Xhaka. But another man maybe who frustrates fans here over the last couple of years is Mesut Ozil. I thought he was really good again tonight. As you mentioned before the game, Mikel Arteta did say that he wants to see a good work rate from Mesut Ozil as well as everything else, but that he will try and get the team to play around him as well. Did you see that tonight?
Oh yeah, most definitely. And I don't think it is Arteta saying I'll try. He says I'm going to. Now, he said the rest of the team are going to have to provide him with a type of service that he can thrive, because if you get the ball consistently into Ozil, you've got a player that they've got no one of the same ilk in the squad. You've got a quality player. And I think at times Emery tried to get that work rate side to him at the expense of getting him into good areas and playing. I think Arteta knows him, having played with him, he's a teammate, so that bodes well, that partnership between the two of them.
The other thing as well is that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who has been brilliant for Arsenal since he signed here, maybe not at his best tonight. So when you think, when you get him firing on all cylinders in a really good team performance, we could see an awful lot more from this Arsenal side as well.
Oh, without a doubt. But listen, I always felt that Arsenal were lucky to have Aubameyang. I think he's a superstar of a centre-forward. The concern that you have is that trying to get him and Lacazette into the team. So they'll push him onto that left-hand side, but he's comfortable there. But what was noticeable, and something what you didn't see towards the end of Emery's regime, was that he was willing to put that real defensive shift in, because more often than tonight, you'd have seen him in the left-back position, and that was the same against Chelsea at home just a few days ago. So he's not shying away from it. I never felt he would, and I've always thought he's a good character in that he'll sacrifice his own game to play on the left to accommodate his mate Lacazette up front, who put in a great shift as well. So there was no player that I potentially said was a weakness. The guys who normally let you down in the key moments, your David Luiz and people like that, were just so consistently good tonight.
Sokratis and David Luiz played well at centre-half, but the January transfer window opening now, will Arteta maybe look at it as an opportunity?
I think he's probably going to hope that Holding comes back. I think Chambers' injury is a big loss, because he was someone that he probably would have played a lot. That looks a bad injury now. He'll probably out for the foreseeable future. It's great to see young Holding back, but I don't know what value he can get in the transfer market, who's available. Is it going to be a significant upgrade on the two performances we saw tonight? Because if you're looking at that, then it's unlikely, because people wouldn't let centre-halves of that quality go. The concern that he will have is that are these players able to consistently do it?
Pep Guardiola, who Mikel Arteta worked under, of course, at Manchester City, always takes cup competitions very seriously. Yeah. Will Mikel Arteta do the same with Arsenal? They, of course, face Leeds on Monday night, third round of the FA Cup. How's he going to do it? Will he take that Pep Guardiola approach?
Yeah, listen, I don't necessarily think he'll try and mirror Pep Guardiola. I think, as he said in the build-up to this game, we play for Arsenal, we're expected to win every game. So he knows it. Can you imagine the crowd that's going to come from Leeds for this game? It's going to be a great atmosphere. It looks like Leeds potentially could get back in the Premier League from promotion for a championship, so they're going well. Of course they are. It's interesting to see that young Eddie Nketiah, this young centre-forward that Arsenal have loaned to Leeds for the season, has been brought back. Now he'll come back to Arsenal in January, so whether or not Arteta wants to see what he's like, it'd be interesting. But I think they have to go after the cup competitions and get some silverware, because that's ultimately what Arsenal are about, challenging at the top.
Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer might be scratching his head tonight and wondering why his United team didn't get going. They never really clicked at all. And as you said, towards the end, it was all hitting hopes up. Like there was no real pattern to their play. What's he thinking tonight after that game?
Well, I think he'd be disappointed. There's no doubt about it. There's no glossing over it. And I'll be interested to see what he says in his press conferences, because at times there's no consistency. There's no real... He seems to contradict himself. We're talking about Pogba. It's a huge miss for Manchester United. If he's firing, we're being led to believe it was a cold, then it's an injury. There's no consistency in terms of what he's saying. There's certainly no consistency in how his team plays. If you play against Manchester United and you don't allow them the opportunity to counter-attack, then they're going to struggle. They've got no creativity in that 10 area, and that's the frustration. We're talking about Manchester United here, and that's the big problem they need to address.
So, United, I suppose, looking ahead, like they have had a good run of form. You know, I'd be kind of a little bit you know, reluctant to maybe say, oh, you know, it's all going wrong again for Manchester United, because they have had a good run of form. They beat Tottenham, beat Manchester City. They've had a good Christmas.
But there's a consistent, there's a reason why they're beating them players, them teams, I should say. They're beating the better teams because they want to dominate possession. Tottenham, Man City, those type of guys. And obviously they got the draw against Liverpool. The only points they've dropped is because they take the game to them so they can counter-attack and play their way. But as soon as the team says to them, we're going to try and sit back, we're going to put a good defensive structure in place in midfield, and you've got to show the ability to break us down there and been able to do it. Now, this isn't one-off, and we're talking about Arsenal, but you've got to give context to where Arsenal are at the moment. They're a struggling team, mid-table, going into the game, essentially. So you're looking at it then now thinking, well, how can a team bottom of the league, Watford, beat them? How can a team that is struggling at the bottom, West Ham, beat them so comfortably, and how have Arsenal been able to do it? It's a recurring theme, and there's a real issue at Manchester United. As much as they want to put the spin on it in terms of the DNA, the culture, I just don't recognise Manchester United.
You certainly wouldn't be predicting right now who, like, if you look at the top four, it's looking like Liverpool, Leicester, Man City maybe to take the top three places. But you really could not predict with any kind of surety who's going to get that fourth place, could you? It's like, as I said before the game, it's the slow bike race again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible, really. You think about the consistency that Chelsea had back end of September going into October. It looked so good, but I think a bit of experience will tell you it's a young team at Chelsea still, so they're learning their way. They're dropping points where they shouldn't have done. They got out of jail winning here because they shouldn't have done, but for a goalkeeper mistake through Leno in goal, which ultimately would have been 6 defeats in 8. They dropped 2 points again now away at Brighton, so they're making it a hard work of it. But again, Arsenal, Manchester United, Spurs again dropping points where you thought Mourinho would make an instant impact. It's not quite happening for him. So it's so much still to play for. Listen, Liverpool are ahead. They've done it. In my opinion, they've won the league. But in terms of that battle for that fourth position, it's going to be a one that goes right to the wire.
Great stuff, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was Gary Breen talking to Doyler after the game last night. We're now joined by Daniel Harris, who was also party to the performance of Manchester United in particular and a 2-0 defeat at the Emirates. Daniel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Coming down from the high of the darts last night, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, the darts was absolutely great to see. I've interviewed Peter Wright a bunch of times, and there's no one on the circuit who works harder and wants it more. And I think, like most people, thought that he was never quite going to get there, that although he's a brilliant player, his finishing has always been excellent, but the scoring was never going to quite be enough to beat the best players on the biggest stage. But he was amazing last night. And what's really interesting about Peter Wright is most sportsmen, the way you see them perform on the pitch, on the stage, in the ring, is a reflection of their personality. It's just an extension of who they are. Whereas Peter Wright is the opposite. He's a really quiet, unassuming bloke. And what you see on stage is an alter ego. Well, I think what he said to me was that's the person he'd like to be. And we saw last night the kind of person that Peter Wright is, who's able to deliver under the most intense pressure and beat a genius like Michael van Gerwen to win the trophy that we thought he would never win. So, yeah, I'm well chuffed for Peter Wright.
So what about these alter egos playing for Man United at the moment?
Well, that's one way of describing them. I can think of some other ways of describing them. I think that there are lots of different ways of looking at how United played last night. And one just really simple way is a midfield of Matic, Fred and Lingard is not going to beat anyone, almost. and you could just leave it right there. Like, United were away to Arsenal. That was the midfield. Of course United got beat. Why would they not get beat with that midfield? But obviously there are other ways of looking at it as well. As in, Arsenal tried harder. I mean, I'm sure that Arsenal fans will say, no, Arsenal are brilliant and Arteta's done this and Arteta's done that in the space of 2 weeks and he's a brilliant manager and all the rest of it. And I'm sure Arteta has got Arsenal playing. But to me, the major difference in that first half, which was when the game was decided, was not a difference of quality. It was Arsenal were first to every loose ball and they played with greater intensity and they played with greater conviction. And that is to do with the manager, but it's not really to do with coaching. It's to do with, I mean, I guess there are elements that you would hope that the coach would inspire the players, but it's also just to do with what comes from inside. And if you're a professional footballer, then you should always be trying hard. And we saw that Arsenal did that. And to get run off the pitch by Arsenal, to get run off the pitch by a midfield that involves Granit Xhaka and Mesut Ozil is embarrassing for United. And that was, to me, was the major difference. As I said, because United actually started the game quite well, the first 8 minutes. Then Arsenal scored with their first attack. And after that, United got discouraged and they didn't have the vim and the vigour to hang in the game when Arsenal had their little moments. And they didn't have the moxie to play hard, aggressive football. And so Arsenal's second goal was deserved. And after that, United didn't have the quality to do anything about it. But the major difference was that difference in effort and application, not in skill and ability.
Well, ultimately, then you kind of have to blame Solskjaer for that, because as you say, that midfield last night was bang average. But if you're talking about a lack of application and effort in advance of some really, really shoddy performances as well since they beat Man City, you know, that the book kind of has to stop at the manager there, does it not? And where is he going with the Pogba situation? We obviously are hearing contrary things as well coming from that camp.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that you have to blame Solskjaer. You have to allocate him some of the blame, but there's an absolute shitload of blame and there's plenty to go around and no need to be sparing. So I wouldn't say it was just his fault, but I think one of the things that's starting to be disappointing about Solskjaer is that he's showing a lot of signs of weakness when he doesn't have to. So there are players that playing for United yesterday, he didn't have a lot of options in every position, but players like Luke Shaw, players like Jesse Lingard, he didn't have to play them, and they're going to end up costing him his job. And when you watch United play badly, you wonder what is going to be the consequence of that performance for those players. And the answer generally appears to be there isn't one, in that Brandon Williams might start against Wolves in the cup instead of Luke Shaw, who was awful last night, but the likelihood is that Shaw will be back for the next league game. Lingard will maybe miss the next game, and again, he'll be back. And what really Solskjaer should be doing is he should be consigning some players to the bench until such time as he has no option but to use them, because there are other players he could play who are playing slightly better than they are. And there might be situations, for example, Williams had a couple of dodgy games, so Solskjaer took him out. And that was fair enough, but he was excellent against Burnley, and he should have had another game in his legs to be able to play last night, because there was no particular indication that Luke Shaw was going to come in and be a massive upgrade. Similarly, I mean, you're kind of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic, obviously, but Andreas Pereira has played quite well recently. There was no need to play Matic or Lingard ahead of him, because I felt like he'd earned the right to stay in the team. And we know what happens when Matic plays, because we've seen it over and over again. And nothing is going to change. He's not suddenly going to become athletic. He's not suddenly going to become a brilliant passer of the ball. He's not suddenly going to be someone who can start dictating games and slowing down the pace. He will slow down his own pace, but it won't have any effect on what goes on around him. And ultimately, Solskjaer's weakness will also extends to the way that he deals with the board, in that he needs to probably stop towing the party line and say what he needs. McTominay is injured probably for 2 months. Who knows whether we're ever going to see Pogba play for United again. And that being the case, he needs midfield players. And he needs to make it very clear that he needs midfield players, because it's no longer at the point where he's protecting the players that he has by saying that he doesn't need midfield players, because it just puts him in a ludicrous position of trying to justify the unjustifiable.
Yeah, the Pogba situation, obviously, it's I suppose it'd be a bit of a joke if it weren't so serious for Solskjaer, but he had that little bit of a grin when he was asked about it yesterday and revealed that he needs a foot operation.
Yeah, I mean, I am the Pogba situation, like we're all adults, we can all see that something looks slightly sus about it, but unless I have some evidence that there is something sus about it, then the kind of the notion that you see floated on the internet, and by not just on the internet, but by writers, I think, as well, that doesn't want to play for United anymore. That seems, I'm sure he wants to leave, but in order to believe that not only does he want to leave, but he would rather not play at all than play for United, I would require some evidence for that. So I'm not going to assume that that's the case. But the fact that United have been without him for the whole season just indicates to me how ridiculous it was that Solskjaer wasn't given money to strengthen the midfield. And also the mistake that I think he made, and I've said this on here, said it even before United signed Harry Maguire, but spending midfield money on Harry Maguire, who has been at best okay, and for me, something of a disappointment, in that we were told, and I mean, I guess when I say his reputation, his PR tells us that he's a threat from attacking set pieces, that he's great at bringing the ball forward and building attacks, and that he's a leader. I've not seen any evidence of this whatsoever.
What's your rating out of 10 for him so far this season then?
4 or 5.
Wow.
Not any more than that. United haven't conceded that many chances and that many goals, and I guess he's part of that. But they've conceded so many goals at key moments that you can't really give him a ranking any higher than that, because he was bought to be that person that stops that from happening. And the good defenders that I've seen play for United, when United had been under pressure, they would stop United conceding goals more or less on their own. And the constant conceding of goals from set pieces, not every goal that United concede from a set piece is Harry Maguire's fault, but he's now the captain of the team. He's the leader of the back four. He should be the person that gets them organised in training and then on the pitch, that stops Alexandre Lacazette running across to the front post and getting a free header. And Lacazette, I don't think Lacazette was his man, but he should be watching to make sure that someone is with Lacazette to stop that from happening, because that was miserable, that second goal that Arsenal scored last night.
Yeah, well,
Harry Maguire is there to stop that miserable stuff from occurring.
The whole box was absolutely full of players, and none of them decided to go with them. But just on Arsenal, you look at the energy they had put into that performance, and Mesut Ozil as well, was absolutely outstanding. What I saw of him in the game, is this going to be sustained under Arteta, or is it kind of the bounce factor that David Moyes maybe is enjoying? Where can Arsenal go this season under Arteta?
I think that it shouldn't really be about where can Arsenal go under Arteta. I think what Arteta needs to do is he needs to find a style that suits the best players that he has. He has to decide which players he wants to keep and which players he wants to get rid of. And he needs to integrate the young players that he thinks are going to be good enough to play for him next season. They're not going to finish in the top four. So it's not really about where they can end up, but about, do they finish the season in a position of hope? Are they better off then than they are now? When I look at the United side and the Arsenal side, I actually think that the Arsenal side needs quite a lot more work. If United signed 2 midfield players, you'd see quite a good team. Arsenal need quite a lot more than that. They need some defenders, they need some midfield players, and they need to work out what the best way is of configuring their attack, because I think Aubameyang on the left, Lacazette in the middle, that's probably not something that's going to get them where they want to be in the long term. So it's funny with Arteta, because people seem to be very confident that he is some kind of savant without a great deal of evidence beyond the fact that Pep Guardiola thinks he's good. And admittedly, I mean, we'd all love that on our CV, but we don't know very much about him. So it's really difficult to evaluate the kind of style of coach that he is, because, yeah, he's definitely got the players playing for him currently. But whether that sustains remains to be seen. And what he's also going to need, probably more important than anything, is going to need an eye for a player. He's going to need to pick players that would improve Arsenal. And he's not going to have the exchequer or the pull that Manchester City have. So he's shopping in a slightly different market now. And in the end, because the squad that he has isn't that good, it's going to be that, like, does he let the right players go, and does he bring the right players in, that's going to define how far he can take Arsenal?
Thanks for your time, Daniel.
No worries. Have a good day.
Yeah, Sports News X with Tom Malone, which is going to basically entail Tom and I talking about the Christmas racing schedule and what we can derive from that in terms of pointers with a view to Cheltenham particularly. But first, bringing you back to Kieran Donaghy's interview. The man who doesn't miss the shots, that's basketball shot expert David Hopla. He joined Kieran Donaghy in OTBAM to talk about his incredible career and teach Kieran some tricks of the trade. Here's a little taste of that conversation.
You're probably famous for being the best shooter of a basketball in the world, but tell us where you came across the game first.
I grew up in a small town in New Jersey called Keyport, and I played, you know, baseball, basketball, and football, and was probably average at best at everything. And then when I moved to Baltimore, moved into the city. So, you know, as you know, basketball is known as the city game, and I joined the YMCA, and I spent countless hours there because I didn't have any friends, and, you know, basketball's a game you can really do things on your own. So I fell in love with that, and then I had a guy named Dana Cunningham. He played at Frostburg State. It was a Division III school, but to me, he was like my Michael Jordan. You know, he showed me things to do, and he gave me a mimeographed copy of Pistol Pete's Basketball Homework, all the ball handling drills to do, and I just fell in love with the game.
Yeah, that was Kieran Donaghy, and that clip's actually on YouTube as well if you want to find the whole exclusive interview with David Hopla. I'm always very wary of these ex-sports people coming in and taking presenting roles because people
Do you know who you need to be wary of? Patrick Mullins taking our jobs.
Well, this is the thing.
He had a piece in the Irish Racing Yearbook, which is still on sale apparently, but an interview with Ruby Walsh, and it's genuinely one of the best pieces of sports writing I've ever come across.
Yeah, when I worked for the Irish Independent, I had to kind of ghostwrite some of Patrick's articles, but he actually sent them in and they just didn't need any editing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, you're...
Sure you build for it though.
And yeah, well, you're like a record-breaking amateur, you know, you're son of Willie Mullins, you're doing everything so well in the racing circuit, and now you're... Just give me something.
He's such a good rider. Let's start with sports news before we go into the racing, will we?
Start with our giving out about people who may take our jobs
in
our future. What's going on in the world of sport?
Well, Manchester United looked like they were without Pogba for much of the month. The midfielder missed last night's 2-1 Premier League loss to Arsenal and needs an operation on an ankle injury. United manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says, though, it isn't a major problem.
It's something that has to be sorted and dealt with within a time frame, and he's been advised to do it as soon as, and he'll probably do it as soon as, so he'll be out for 3 or 4 weeks probably.
Not sure. Something has to be sorted within a time frame. Euphemisms and so forth. Maybe.
Absolutely.
Maybe not.
He can't go in the window though. They're not going to get money for him. Right. Speaking of not so happy Christmases, Tottenham boss Jose Mourinho did not enjoy his New Year's Day trip to Southampton in the Premier League. Angered when he saw time wasting from Spurs opponents and was critical of VAR, the ball boy, and his team of course slumped to a 1-0 defeat as well. Mourinho also lost Harry Kane to injury and was booked for an argument with an opposition coach. Here he is.
I was rude, but I was rude to an idiot, and. And for some reason, I was rude. But I was. And because I was rude, I deserve the yellow card.
Is that not the 21st century take on the... Was that not a Ron Atkinson quote? Said, I won't talk about referees, and I'm not breaking a habit of a lifetime for that idiot.
the ball boys are getting a bit too much kudos in this game at the moment. We're seeing lots of instances of them kind of... being catapulted to the headlines, but anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, elsewhere, quick run through yesterday. West Ham made a flying start under returning manager David Moyes. They had a 4-0 win over Bournemouth. Leicester City and Manchester City attempted to keep the pressure on Liverpool with wins 3-0 for Leicester over Newcastle. Man City beat Everton by 2-1. Chelsea drew 1-1 at Brighton. Aston Villa, meanwhile, moved out of the relegation zone with a 2-1 win at Burnley. And Tottenham Watford beat Wolves by the same scoreline. Liverpool will look to restore their 13-point lead at the top of the table later. They welcome Sheffield United to Anfield. It will be a record lead at the top of the table at this stage of the season, but manager Jurgen Klopp says he won't be celebrating winning the title, the first since 1990, since they get their hands on that trophy.
Everybody asked me about how was your 2019. My 2019 was brilliant, but it's not important. We count seasons, not years. Who cares about points in December? So we just created a basis which we will work with from now on. That's all.
Liverpool fans are going to be pushing Kerry fans, aren't they, for the trying to keep a lid on things. Like, they've won. Like, just say you've won.
Well, they're 10 points clear with 2 games in hand. This would be Devon Locke-esque collapse if... I can't see it.
Huddersfield Town say they will carry out an investigation into sectarian abuse towards Republic of Ireland international Stoke City winger James McLean. Their championship clash yesterday, which Stoke won by 5-2 at the John Smith Stadium, was halted for a period to allow the referee to address both managers. McLean had reported that he received abuse from the crowd, and he applauded when the announcement was made over the stadium PA, where fans were warned that offensive behaviour will not be tolerated. Meanwhile, the top of the championship promotional favourites, West Brom, and Leeds United, took a point apiece from their meeting at the Hawthorns. Albion defender Semi Ajayi scored at both ends in the 1-1 draw between the division's top two. That result keeps Leeds above Albion on goal difference, with both sides 9 points clear of third place Brentford. Quick rugby story. Quinn Roo's hopes of returning to the Irish side for the Six Nations have been dashed. A 29-year-old requires surgery on a hand injury he picked up against Munster over the Christmas interprovincial titles. And in darts, Peter Snakebite Wright took his first ever championship last night, beat Michael Van Gerwen Derwin, 7-3 in that one. Also became the oldest first-time winner as well, age 49. Big news as well, Fallon Sherrick, of course, she was the kind of breakthrough act of the darts. She's been named as one of the nine challengers to compete alongside the top nine players in this year's Premier League of Darts. So the 25-year-old, of course, first woman to win at the PDC World Championship. And she reached round three. Of course, one challenger appears with the top nine darts players every week, which gets underway in Aberdeen on the 6th of February. And of course, yesterday, Album Photo back at Tremor as well.
Here we have it, the front of the race and post today. Boom, back with a bang. An Album Photo, who actually won this race last year en route to a less expected Gold Cup victory, returned to face three rivals at Tremor and did the job very nicely. And that's part of our little racing chat for the next few minutes. One of the narratives of the Christmas period was, where are we with the Gold Cup? He won the race last year. I don't think he could have done any more yesterday. His jumping was brilliant. But then we look at Presenting Percy, who was unplaced. Kenboy was beaten on his return in the same race. Lost in Translation was disappointing. The King George, where are we at with the Gold Cup?
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the Savills Chase at Leopard's End and what kind of form it's going to throw up. I mean, you look back to the Down Royal form, that was really strong there because, Delta Workplace in that and Clan des Obos obviously placed in that as well.
Yeah.
I think it's muddling. Kenboy just, or Albion Photo just stands out as the only one that's actually held up a bit of consistent form, doesn't he?
He does, and he's been basically flawless since he joined the senior ranks. And I have to say, watching the race last year, Presenting Percy never got into a jumping rhythm. Kenboy can jump. He's quick. He makes the odd mistake, but I thought he was very good in his jumping yesterday. Tremor wouldn't be the biggest jumping test, but he was nimble, and it never looked in
lovely and quick and effortless over his fences, which you kind of can't underestimate in the absolute slog that is a Gold Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking through what will contend, I think you'd... Delta Work, I couldn't really see him coming back. Lost in Translation's jumping was terrible.
Yeah, I was he was my kind of idea of the winner. I was very disappointed in him. Presenting Percy finishes fifth. He's a half length behind Kenboy. You do get the feeling, as much as last year's prep was, when you look at him this season and he's had a couple of runs, to think that he went there last year without any chase run in the season, because he still looks like he needs a bit more experience.
Yeah, absolutely. He's quite a big, gross chaser.
Like,
the Gold Cup horses need to arrive there hard fit, but...
This is class, though, right? So he was fifth, he was fourth. Delta Work won the race. And they're just part of a huge picture that so many horses could win this, which I quite like about the Gold Cup this year. These Cheltenham preview nights, we've a lot of people with different views, I guess.
Yeah, I think the Gold Cup, again, for the second year in a row, is shaping up to be, quite rightly, the race of the festival. And that can only be a good thing.
Jack Kennedy's back with a bang.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Gordon Elliott dominated the Christmas period. There were 8 grade ones over the entire Christmas. You'd have to say the only disappointment was Sam Crow, really. Took 4 of the 7 grade ones at Leopardstown, took the big handicap into Paddy Power, took a grade 2 as well. And you look overall, and the 3 big novice races coming up at the Cheltenham Festival, and Gordon Elliott has a favourite for all 3 in Fury Road, Envoy Len, who could be anything and could go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He runs at Nace on Sunday. And then obviously Abacadabras, who was brilliant again, and the 2-miler. Although some of the grade ones at Leopardstown, you'd have to say depth-wise, looked a little disappointing.
Well, there's no doubt about that. There was no disappointment to the depth of Rachel Blackmore's performance.
This is the best story. This is my favourite racing story of 2019.
Well, Greg Woods had an article in The Guardian, I think, was it yesterday or the day before, just about Rachel, and that she's basically the best thing since sliced bread when it comes to racing. And
the best thing about Rachel Blackmore as a jockey is that...
humility.
And you don't have to have this female jockey discussion about her. 6 grade ones in 2019, and you look forward to what's coming in Cheltenham 2020, and you're talking about potentially 5 or 6 single prize figure runners over the course. So you've got Aspire Tower, who could be disputing favouritism potentially for the Triumph, Honeysuckle, who will be favourite for the Mares, depending on what happens with Penny De Dieu, Manella Indo,
wins,
who has a lively
just
chance
wins.
In the RSA, Notebook, who announced himself as an Arkle
now
contender.
Fair for the Arkle. There was an interesting...
And then and that's without considering likes of Monley.
There was an interesting line in that Guardian piece, which you can find online, and it's from Henry de Bromhead. Eddie O'Leary, the race manager to Michael, suggested to me last year in a taxi going to Aintree, because normally in a taxi you don't really talk anything of any real substance. You talk crap to the taxi driver or whatever, and turns out that you know, he does or doesn't want to talk to you, but blah blah blah. There's Henry and Eddie, who's obviously a great judge. He said it's worth trying Rachel. He had a very high opinion of her. He'd always take on board what he'd say. We started slowly, but suddenly it took off. So Eddie and Michael Leary have actually been quite instrumental in a lot of the lady riders, because obviously Lisa O'Neill, they've really pushed her forward as well. They've given opportunities to Katie O'Farrell, and they've obviously given a lot of opportunity to Rachel, who's...
The one thing I will say about Rachel Blackmore is that the way she rides her races particularly suits Jigginstown runners.
Absolutely.
She likes to be prominent, and people say, oh, it's an aggressive style, but I actually think to ride prominently in Ireland is actually a sensible thing to do, because a lot of, you know, particularly in beginners chase and maiden hurdles, dropping out the back is a death trap. Mm-hmm. Like, you end up behind, stuck in so much traffic, you end up stuck around bad horses. If you're in a Jigginstown horse, you know, in a maiden hurdle, there are 200 grand store, most likely, or they've come out of a point to point for 300,000. They're expensive quality horses.
Well, we'll say what Boro Saint the other day. She like...
That was a sublime ride.
On Twitter, I thought that was a great ride. A lot of people were giving out about the rides in behind. And it was probably one of those days where sort of horses in behind, they were making their comebacks, or they didn't find a lot, or blah, blah, blah. But I don't remember seeing her going off too fast and something. And
no.
This is not... She's riding a horse that says 3.5 miles over, 2.5 thereabouts, 2.3 even,
I think. She won the race down the back. Yeah. I mean, she jumped off in front, took 4 or 5 lengths, got down the back in Punchestown, which is where you can win a race. If you can get to the kind of wall in Punchestown and let your horse have a breather and roll down that hill, as you've seen Ruby Walsh do over the years so many times at the Punchestown Festival, you have a massive advantage. She kicked on down the back straight. As she said after the race, the horse is aggressively approaching all his obstacles. Jumped into a lovely rhythm, had about a 12-length lead, and then coming down to the second and third last when everyone else was looking to make progress, she could just sit, a mistake happened in behind, and
bang bang,
that was it. She'd won the race because of basically sensibly taking as much ground as she could at the point of the race, and she knew no one else would attack her.
They go on a lot about Bryony Frost, obviously, in Britain, in the British press. I think we've a more nuanced kind of appreciation of Rachel, in that it's she's doing wonders, I think, for women in sport. And there is an article today about The Guardian, actually, about women's football, which is obviously taken off. But what I love about her is she doesn't hog the limelight at all. Yeah. And I'm not having a pop at Bryony here, because I think Bryony's, as much as like the...
I think she's foisted on her more than she courts it.
And she's like, she is well able to talk, but it's not foisted on Rachel, and she wouldn't be a natural in that position, because she's all about... But the thing for me about Rachel is not the fact that she was a failing or struggling lady amateur, because that doesn't really matter anymore. It was the fact that she was a struggling amateur full stop, and she went pro because she thought she'd get more rides.
Yeah.
Now, nobody could have predicted what's happened, but I just love the story.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you get caught in that cycle of constantly riding bad horses at terrible point to points, you just get sucked into it.
Yeah.
I remember talking to an amateur rider, and he said to me, I've ridden the worst horses on the planet. I rode a 12-year-old maiden the other day. And you're just like...
Sounds like one for the charity race for you,
actually. You're just talking about, this is, you know... Yeah. And these riders, when you just don't get any breaks, and then you're constantly sitting on bad horses, they just fall off the planet.
They do. Our final talking point in this little racing slot is the smudged champion hurdle picture. Where do we start?
I mean, all you got to do, I mean, at this stage, to become a champion hurdle favourite, all you have to do is win a conditions hurdle, isn't it? Yeah. I kind of jokingly put up before the Boro Saint race, I mean, we're going to end up with Seglawi as champion hurdle favourite here, because...
And he ran a nice prep.
All I'm thinking over Christmas is like when City Island jumped terribly, it's like they should have kept him over hurdles. He'd be champion hurdle favourite if they just left him over hurdles.
Well, Epitant is his favourite now. She was obviously disappointing at Cheltenham last year. She returned with a comfortable win, a handicap, and she travelled really well at Kempton. Now,
yeah, she's a speedy sort who travelled really well at Kempton. Mm-hmm.
Whether she should, again, I'm not necessarily buying into the hype here. She beat Ballyandy in third and Silver Streak.
It's
doubts about the others and that, obviously.
It's doubts about the others, and it's also, she was absolutely terrible in the Mare's Novice last year, which is not the best race.
It's not.
I think she had excuses for that. But
you talk about three McManus runners alone, right? So we had Esper Delaine was probably nearly favoured for the race, lost his life. Then we had...
Bouverdaire
is like... you know, he's almost favoured for the race by default. He's out for the season. And then we have the mare, who was rated 137 going into the Christmas hurdle.
Maybe just for context, maybe just give viewers 137. Like, Fahin's rated in the 170s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's division 3 to division 2 to
yeah,
Premier
like
League.
You want to be a genuine top grade one horse, he should be minimum mid 150s.
And my idea of the winner, Saldier, is like, it's just he didn't appear at Christmas. There is that kind
Saldier,
of nagging concern.
Classical Dream was absolutely terrible.
He was.
Ballooned all of his hurdles. Sharjah went and did his thing again. But like, what a Christmas for Patrick Mullins. You know, Willie Mullins, until New Year's Eve, Willie Mullins was heading for his most barren December since 2009. He'd had 19 winners from 128 runners. Like, and then, look, you go ride him off, then he goes and has 6 winners in 2 days. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, Classical Dream, another disappointment for him. Shaqan Pur Soi, Fernie Hollow beaten again.
I was disappointed in Shaqan Pur Soi, but I wouldn't lose the faith, I think.
No.
If he's ridden in a manner maybe that kind of advertises his jumping, more so at Cheltenham, just get him prominent. I thought there was, like 90% of that race I thought was perfect. It was end where
he looked like he blew up a bit, didn't he?
We have a treat for Friday Night Racing fans tomorrow.
Yeah, really
Tom Bugsy Malone.
Yeah, Cathal Beale's going to be on. He is a brilliant, brilliant guy. He's the chief executive of the Irish National Stud, of course, the Irish Thoroughbred Marketing Stallion Trail upcoming on the 10th and 11th of this month as well, where the public can go and see all the stallions, get out to the studs, and just, I think it's a brilliant experience, see something completely different. Of course, if you're a flat fan, you know, go down to Giltown, see the stars. You know what I mean? Like, see how these horses
really
are different.
See the stars.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. Anyway, looking forward to chatting to him, of course, and their big stallion is Invincible Spirit, but they signed Phoenix of Spain as well. Mm. So his first season there this year.
Decorated Knight as well, one of the recent additions to the roster. Thanks for coming in, Tom.
Cheers, Johnny.
That was Tom Malone, who will be back with us tomorrow as well for the Friday Night Racing. And we will be back just after 9 a.m. with the return of Deal or No Deal. First, though, every Friday on Off the Ball, in association with HRI, we bring you Friday Night Racing, and we've had some really brilliant guests across 2019. Who's your favourite?
Well, I was on with Warren O'Connor. I thoroughly enjoyed him, but I thought Chris Hayes was great.
Chris Hayes was great. We did end the year with Davy Russell in studio, and that was a particularly memorable performance by Davy. And here he is on the improvements that have been made and how racehorses are managed. And first, why he never pays heed to the favourite sag in a race.
You see, that's the difference between certain people. You see, your view on that is he's favourite, right? My view on that is he's a horse. And he has so much to do. But your view on it is...
My view on it is he's the most likely winner of the race. Yeah. So you're not riding a 25-1, do you know what I mean? So
but
there
I
is,
am.
But you're not. You're riding the most likely winner of the race,
yes,
and there's pressure on you.
Yeah, no, there isn't. There's no pressure on me.
Right.
Because he's 20. He's actually 40-1 because there's 4 other horses. There's 39 other horses in the race. And any one of them can win the race. So... He's not 3-1 favourite, and he's 40-1 because he's this exact same chance.
You can't believe that, though.
No, I
And
have
I'm not
to.
Even talking about pressure. I'm on about you. You must go out there thinking, I have a right chance here.
Of course,
and belief in the horse.
Of course,
as opposed to if
but
I get one wrong,
I equate done. Everybody else in the race to be 40-1. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't give anybody else. I don't think anybody else has a better chance than me. I think I have the best chance in the race, but
That's
I don't.
My point. Yeah.
But I don't care. The 3-1 is not in my mindset. I don't care about it. In my opinion, I feel the care for horses, and I think people get away from that a little bit. We would just take Tyrol, for instance. He, at the moment, is after getting a chip removed from his leg. When I started, you couldn't imagine that happening, you know. So then that horse would eventually, you know, peter out, and he wouldn't be able to run anymore. Nowadays, the care and attention that goes into all its prevention is always better than cure. So they're now able to, the things they're able to do with you know, the vets, and it's a whole team. It's the horses are involved in the team, the jockeys in the team, the trainer, the owners, you know, and it's a huge network of people that the care for horses and everything. I think everything is changing for the better.
That's information and communication and understanding that you have data that they don't have that is useful.
Yeah.
And likewise, that they have information.
But I think it's the want. The want is there for everything to be better and safer and happier. OTB
AM. Very shortly, we're going to have Deal or No Deal. But first, let's hear from Shane Lowry, who spoke to John Duggan over the Christmas to reflect on what was an unbelievable year for the Offaly man.
Well-wishers, TV shows, text messages, any kind of mad stories from that you remember after winning the Open, a seismic change in your life?
I obviously, like, I'm a huge sports fan, so getting the recognition I got from other sports people, not only in Ireland but across the world, and but definitely in Ireland, even like you look at the GA players, which would be my, you know, my sporting idols would be GA players. So to get, I remember Michael Dignan text me and asked me, would he be able to send my number to Brian Whelan if that was okay, and I said yeah, you can send my number to anyone that has legendary status like him. So that's the kind of stuff, and it's just been I've a few TV shows and requests, and it's just mad to think that I am where I am in the game, but I really need to believe it now and kick on from here and keep going, because I feel like I'm only starting to get going, and hopefully I can achieve a lot more.
Time for Deal or No Deal with Phil Egan, who was rudely interrupted by an alarm earlier on. I think what we're going to do on the radio anymore now is if we're going to say something that's on the verge of being like going to get us in trouble or libelous, the alarm will go off. And it's like,
I thought that's what it was.
Because we were talking about snake bite and so on and so forth. Yeah. You were going to say something amazingly kind of erudite and informative, but you never got the chance. You never will.
Never will. No one will ever know what I was going to say.
No one will ever know. Welcome back to Deal or No Deal.
Good to be back.
I like this top one. So Borussia Dortmund won the battle to sign the 19-year-old wonder kid, Erling Haaland, who's obviously a son of Alf Inge. How highly should we rate him? Should a Premier League club have broken the bank to bring him to England?
I don't think so just yet, because what we saw of him playing for Salzburg, looked good. I know he scored at Anfield. He didn't start that game, but he started the last game, which was the only group game he didn't score. Mm-hmm. Now, he had his moments in that game, but I didn't think he was overly impressive. But you have to remember, he's still only 19, and Germany is a good league. Obviously, Dortmund is one of the better clubs in Germany. It was either going to be Dortmund or Leipzig. You probably thought it was going to be Leipzig, given the connection there, even if they say that there is no connection, but there clearly is. He obviously would have got to work under Nagelsmann, but Leipzig are flying at the moment. But yeah, he'll develop, and then Premier League clubs can have a look at him. They can see how does he fare in Germany. They've seen how he's done in Austria. Now he's stepping up another level, and then they'll be able to tell, even after, between now and the end of the season, I'm sure there'll be plenty of scouts going over to see, can he cut it in the Bundesliga? And if he does, he's 19.
He's 19.
What I've seen of him, he's got, obviously he's huge.
Yeah, he's
quick
a
though as well.
He needs to probably work on his technique a little bit. But he's a prospect.
Yeah.
Sticking in Dortmund for a moment, the Bleacher Report reports that Jadon Sancho, Sancho could very possibly be tied into an early transfer agreement a la Christian Pulisic, which would see him become a Premier League player. Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United are all linked with the Englishman making a splash in the Bundesliga. He's under contract until 2020 and expected to sell for 100 million plus. Man City, who sold it to the German club, have a buyback clause and the chance to make the highest bid. How good is he and where will he end up?
Yeah, he's quality, and he kind of just going back to what we said about Haaland, where he decided, I need to get some first team football, went over, has been brilliant. Obviously got his England caps as well. And, there has been a general feeling that he was always going to end up back in the Premier League, and Dortmund would be quite happy, I'm sure, to cash in on him. Who he goes to, I don't know. He's been linked with Liverpool, and I think maybe that happens because of the kind of player he is. He's pacey. Obviously the Dortmund connection. But see, Liverpool are in a position now where players want to play for them. And Klopp has also told people how long he's going to be at the club, 2024. So that question is gone now, where, is Jurgen Klopp still going to be there when I'm there? So that would suggest that if Liverpool wanted him, they could certainly get. Whether Manchester City would want to take him back, I don't know if City would be in the position to do what Chelsea have done plenty of times, where they get players back and they pay huge money to get players that they let go for next to nothing.
Tammy Abraham's new contract talks with Chelsea have stalled, according to Goal, because the 22-year-old wants to be on the same as Hudson-Odoi, which is 180 grand a week. Who's the better player? And should Chelsea just hand over the cash?
Yeah, I think from what we've seen from Tammy Abraham, people will obviously judge him on his goal scoring. And he gets, one of the things that some people criticise him for is that he's not scoring in big games. But from what we've seen from this season is he's a handful, not only in terms of scoring goals, but just physically imposing. He's quick as well. So, you know, he has all those attributes. He's only going to get better. And unfortunately for Hudson-Odoi, he had that Achilles injury at the end of the last season. So we don't know how good he's going to be. But what we saw, I remember the first time I saw him play in a pre-season game, I thought, who is this lad? And Sarri obviously didn't want to play him. Eventually, he started playing him and he saw why there's been so much talk about this guy. He obviously got the injury. But, you know, he certainly was very clever with being linked with Bayern Munich. And basically Chelsea thought, we don't want a situation that City had with Sancho where you lose a young prospect to Germany and then he turns out to be unbelievable. So they paid the wages. But I think that's unfortunately what happens. If you're going to pay one young player that kind of money, then Tammy Abraham is well within his rights Absolutely. To say, well, I want this because I score goals.
It's like the Irish managerial job. If you pay an awful lot of money to your predecessor, well, I'm not going to take the job for a third of the money. The Telegraph reports that Jurgen Klopp has resigned himself to the fact that the club will lose Adam Lallana on a free this summer. Would he be lost to Liverpool and where should he end up? I mean, he's played so little, really.
Yeah, he's just been injured too much. But he was part of that Klopp team, the first team that Klopp picked, which was away against Tottenham. And I remember Lallana came off in that game and he was shattered. And that's why Klopp always stuck by him even through his injuries, because Klopp demands work and Lallana always gave that to him. Very good technical footballer, but just been injured too much. And
he'd be a proper signing for a club that could have definitely,
he's certainly good enough to stay in the Premier League, that's for sure. And you just wonder, maybe he would be more suited to a team that isn't as attritional as Liverpool, because you know, obviously,
good point on the injury front.
He couldn't keep fit all the time under Klopp and the way that Liverpool play.
We're going to move on. After last night's loss, Manchester United manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says the club would like to sign two midfielders in the window. Here's a taste of the players linked with the club via Sky Sports live tracker. Christian Eriksen, we've already mentioned Sancho, Emre Can, Vidal, Grealish, off the charts goal again yesterday, Dembele, Pereira and Richarlison. What do you like? And also, what percentage chance do they have of getting into the Champions League this season? They are 5 points off Chelsea in fourth, and I've been told by my authorities here it's a one-word answer, which is literally a number. What percentage chance?
I'd say we give them 40%. We'll give them a pass. But like, nobody seems to want that fourth place at the moment.
Nobody, and I was actually thinking this earlier, who wants the Europa League if like the likes of Arsenal, does Arteta want the Europa League, which is achievable? But we don't have time, we're going to stay in Catalonia. Deal or no deal favourites, Mundo Deportivo hit the streets of Barcelona to survey Barca fans. 80% of those surveys didn't want Valverde to get a new deal, and they're first choice favourite to get the job, 33% is Klopp, ahead of the other front runner, former Barca great Ronald Koeman, 31%. Will Jurgen Klopp be the next Barcelona manager?
No.
Patrick Emerick Aubameyang looks set to leave Arsenal this summer, with Inter and Barcelona linked with the striker. Would he be good enough to make an impact at the Camp Nou? And we did have Gary Breen speaking earlier about how much he rates Aubameyang.
Yeah, he's certainly good enough. And if you look at Barcelona at the moment, Suarez is certainly not the player he was. Dembele's had too many injuries. Griezmann's been okay. But yeah, there's definitely, I think wherever Aubameyang goes, he'll always score goals. And there was the only reason maybe he ended up at Arsenal, where some of the bigger clubs wouldn't have got him. There was always this question about the way his attitude at Dortmund, where he was trying to manoeuvre a move away from there, but since he's come in, he's been brilliant.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. And no alarms.
That's no alarms. If you missed it earlier, it was really radio gold. The alarm went off in the middle of the studio. I think God just couldn't listen to Phil and I talk darts that hour of the morning. But that is it all for Thursday morning. Thanks very much for joining us since 7:30, and we'll be back live on air tonight with Off the Ball from 7 p.m. Don't forget to subscribe to the OTBAM podcast. It's fully timestamped, making it easy to find exactly what you want from every morning's two-hour show. And do remember, it's Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show. We upload all our best bits to YouTube throughout the day, and you can Chromecast that or watch on Apple TV or your smart TV. We are back tomorrow morning from 7:30 a.m. and we shall see you then.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.